Okay, you're good.
Give him a second to get it.
Thanks for coming. This is the Will of the Bay Advisory Group, our final Will of the Bay North of Falcon meeting before I get on a plane, Dan and I get on a plane tomorrow morning and head to PFMC and try and wrap this up. So tonight, what I want to cover in the agenda, introductions, opening comments, I got a few of those. We'll talk about the commission guidance from this last weekend in terms of the comprehensive review. So we got some guidance for the comprehensive review process, as well as guidance for 2019. We've got the layered gear restriction issue that we dealt with. And we talked a little bit about the public meeting, and I know the advisors have received a small, like a four-page kind of PowerPoint presentation to hopefully clarify any of those issues. So just want to touch base with that real quick and make sure everybody's on the same page in terms of what we're talking about. And then lastly, we've had some models that have been sent in by the commercial sector, and one that staff has developed. So we've got the summary and the model outputs from those, and we'll go through those, and if we have time, we'll do some modeling on the fly for any proposals that folks may have this evening. So that's kind of the agenda. Anybody from the advisory group got any questions about that, anything? Okay, and for you folks in the public, just a reminder, this is an advisory group meeting, so the first about an hour and 45 minutes will be just conversation for the advisors. We will save some time at the end of the agenda for the public to come up and get their thoughts onto the record. So that'll be kind of the process for tonight. One point of order that I kind of want everybody to know about is I've got Sergeant Ryan there in the back. And next to him is Officer Bolt. Officer Bolt is our new Raymond Detachment Officer. So just wanted everybody to have a chance to get a look at him and see him, and know who he is. And we have filled that position. I believe he'll be on singular duty here coming up in the next couple of days.
Correct, yes.
Okay, great. So with that, my opening comments, I just want to talk a little bit about North of Falcon process and what's been happening from a statewide perspective. I know I follow the blog posts and some of that stuff. I know there's a lot of rumors out there that the tribes have walked away from the negotiations. I don't know if any of you have heard that, but it's out there. That's not the case. That hasn't happened as far as I understand. In fact, there are meetings scheduled for tonight with the Olympia headquarters staff and some of our co-managers down in California this very evening. So with that being said, it has been a very challenging North of Falcon. The issue has been chum management in the South Sound. Currently, chum are managed in the South Sound on the aggregate. There's been some successes with that, and there's been some failures as well. So we're trying to work through a new kind of management paradigm for South Sound chum, working with our co-managers. That has taken up almost all of the North of Falcon time. Usually, by the time we're at Linwood, we have an agreed-to official model run between the state and the co-managers for both Chinook and Coho to look where everything sits in terms of the management and conservation objectives for the year. That has not happened yet. In fact, we haven't talked at all with the co-managers about Chinook and Coho. All the way through Linwood, the last day of Linwood, it's all been about South Sound Chum. So we are behind schedule overall, and there's a lot of work to get done between now and next Monday in order to get our permit to prosecute fisheries. So that doesn't necessarily affect Willapa Bay. We don't need an ESA permit coverage to prosecute our fisheries. But if something, heaven forbid, were to go dramatically south, as I mentioned to the Grace Harbor folks last night, that if you saw the Puget Sound fisheries closed for whatever reason, and we're open, there's likely to be quite a bit of effort shift out here, right? So just something to keep in mind. And this will come up a little bit later as we move down to the agenda, but not having that official model run yet to look at is troubling. It is troubling. So we've got a lot of work to do moving forward. So any questions from the advisors or anything on that? Okay. Hearing none, let's just move into the commission guidance. So the first one I want to talk about is this orange sheet. And Barb did a great job color-coding everything for us so we can flip to this stuff easily. So this is the commission guidance for the comprehensive review process. Okay, they've added some additional steps to us in terms of our timeline. That concerns staff and the Willapa Bay Advisory Group. So I'm not going to read this off step by step. I'm just going to summarize. But one, we need to through the testimony with the commission this last Saturday or up through the next 2 weeks, we'll be essentially taking feedback from the commission or any sort of questions that they want included into the comprehensive review. So we're giving them a few-week window to deliver us some items that they specifically would like the comprehensive review to touch on. Haven't seen any of those yet. I don't remember from Barb's notes from the commission testimony if there was anything specific. I don't believe there was from the commission meeting in terms of items for the comprehensive review. I don't remember any, but the whole thing was kind of a blur. So the second item is a table of contents. We'll be working on a table of contents and get that to the commission in early May. We will also get a draft of that to the Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group for their comments as well. So both you folks and the commission will be seeing that table of contents, crossing a draft of it anyways, crossing your email here sometime early May. In terms of the additional meetings, item number three, we will go back in front of Fish Committee. Originally, we just had scheduled to go to the Fish Committee in August with a product progress update. They would like a few more regular check-ins, so we'll check in with the Fish Committee in June, September, and October. Okay, just with the Fish Committee. Those are just progress updates. And then in October, instead of finalizing the proposal in November, or finalizing the seeking approval of the final report for the comprehensive review, that'll happen in October instead of November. That November commission meeting was canceled for whatever reason. So that we'll do that there. We'll also take some public testimony on that. And there should be a call for adoption for a preliminary range of alternatives for policy changes if necessary. So in October, they might give us some guidance in terms of analysis to look at for moving forward with the policy from that point forward. They're going to schedule a tentative agenda item for January in 2020 to take a look at that with the idea of if there were to be any changes, that those would be enacted either at the February or March commission meeting. They also would like us to add a bunch of Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group meetings between that June and October meeting. So I'm kind of thinking monthly, maybe a monthly check-in. I know for the commercial sector that's going to be very difficult because you guys aren't going to be around in June, nor are you going to be around in July, nor are you going to be around maybe till late August. Middle August. Something like that. So Want to have a conversation about that real quick. Does everyone feel like monthly check-ins will be good? Do we need to meet more regularly? Do we need to meet less regularly? So, anyone? Tim, you got any thoughts on that?
You will want to hear me.
Well, I'm having a needing to have a conversation about this and trying to.
Well, it's simply the fact that I really don't like having meetings to have meetings. Okay.
Yep.
And when you know what you're going to do, and you have a meeting, and you tell us what you're going to do, and then you do something totally different to that following week, you negated any value for the public to have any input to you. And you destroyed your credibility. And I think have on these meetings. You know, call on, have him meet with the boys on the other end of the table, and tell us what you're going to do. That's the best I could say. So I really think that if you have a purpose, then I would be willing to come. But you better have a purpose for us rather than putting an X in a box, because I have no faith in that anymore, and I'm not interested in that anymore.
Okay. I see you, Marley, so I'm going to kind of go through. Norm, do you have any thoughts on process there, whether we should do this monthly, bi-weekly?
As long as we can make meaningful progress to a goal, I have no problem with monthly meetings.
Okay.
It's a matter of making meaningful progress instead of the stasis that we've been involved in for the last several years.
Okay. Marlisa?
I struggle with my low expectations that I have from your department and the debacle that happened last Saturday was pretty hard to swallow. Francis isn't here today, probably one of our most notable members, you know, trying to, you know, spend hours and make this thing come right, and he's too fed up to show up. What was the point of having any meetings whatsoever when you were going to do what you did anyway? It is clear to me, and if it's not clear to other recreational fishers, that we are not represented here.
Okay. Bob, you got any thoughts?
No, I think right now, and actually what the commission did, I think it's starting to right the ship.
Okay, hold on a second, folks.
Yeah,
I'm trying to keep this to a specific topic.
Well, yeah.
We got a lot of work to do, and I get that there's a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of distrust. You know, there's people on both sides of the decision that happened this weekend. My point in having this meeting tonight is not to debate that back and forth.
No, it wouldn't.
Regardless of what happened,
we have
our guidance for moving forward for 2019, and I really want to focus on moving forward and getting some work products done. Like I said, we got a lot of stuff to go over tonight. Want to touch on this. But can't let this dominate our meeting. I need a fishery package to go to California with tomorrow morning.
So. As far as the meetings that you asked about monthly,
yep.
I think that's fine. Now, the guys from Alaska,
I understand that. That's why I'm talking to you. I'm not even, I know they won't be here. We will do our best to make sure and get you guys materials, audio, all that stuff, while you're gone.
We can do that.
And maybe we can set up some sort of audio conference.
The middle of June to the middle of July.
Okay.
We can do stuff.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely try and think outside the box and find ways that you guys will be able to participate as well.
That's what I was going to say. Put the agenda out. Let us read it for a day or two. We'll have a phone conference.
Okay.
If we can't get anything constructive on the phone conference, and it's a good topic and everybody agrees, schedule a meeting the following week.
Okay, thank you for that, guys. That will be helpful as we start to put that stuff together and shape what that framework may look like.
I think that we have to look at these meetings and honestly see if we are doing something constructive, because I feel like you've been mandated to have meetings. People have wanted to be able to say what they felt, but at the end of it, I think we have to realize what our role is. And I think that's one of the things that we don't discuss, that you don't make very, I think that when we come to the meeting, sometimes we feel like if we tell you this, then we expect that's what you have to go back and say, regardless of whether it's a commercial issue or a sport issue. And I think that's part of the problem with having meetings all the time, is I think that we get the feeling in the group that we have a meeting. This is what we discussed. Now this is what has to happen. And I think what happens is, as this whole process has gone on, we've had meetings. And then whatever happens with the people that are making the decisions is what's going to happen. And I think that's the part that I see where, what is constructive in this meeting? Because I think we feel like five people came in and said, this is what we should do, and if it's not that way, then it's not a constructive meeting. So I think somewhere we've got to say what our goal, what we're supposed to do here with you. Okay. What you want from us. You don't have control of a lot of this stuff. And I, you know, there's been a lot of things I haven't liked over the years. Obviously a lot of things the rec fishery doesn't like now. But we sat on that same side of the table. It felt very frustrating. But it wasn't. We've still come to meetings. We've still had our discussions. But we have to realize that it gets done outside of your hands, like it or not. You don't have control of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hearing you guys loud and clear. We don't want to have meetings just to have meetings. I think we want to have them at critical pinch points where we can be very constructive in terms of the input and data sharing of what's being developed in the comprehensive review, and getting that out to your folks to make sure, you know. So I'm hearing you loud and clear. Thank you. Yes, Tim.
Compliment Lance on what he said. I'm going to take it one step further and make it very clear. In this room, when you produce those options, I asked you specifically whether this department was endorsing one of these options as a means to amend this policy. You absolutely looked me in the eye and said, no, we're not.
Yep.
Now we've got another problem. What's Ron Warren doing behind closed doors? Remember this? And I was worried about some sneaky arrangement happening to us. Then we walked in there, and that's exactly what happened to us. As members of the committee were lobbied behind closed doors by this policy, this department's policy, we went up to talk. We couldn't even talk about option D because it was an example that you were just giving to the commission out of their request. So once our public testimony was over, Ron comes in, launches his bomb. Okay, we don't have an opportunity to speak. If you go to this, you'll see that you would have a document amending the policy that would be out for our review. We had a settlement of a lawsuit, and we had instructions to this advisory group that we would be involved in discussing this. It didn't happen. So what happened? You know, did you get thrown under the bus that day, or is Ron covering your ass? I don't know which. But I'm sorry, Chad. I don't want to be. I've never been so disgusted in my entire life. You saw an amendment. You got this stuff, talking about all this stuff. Was the right priority eliminated?
No.
Okay. So we come back in here from Saturday to now Wednesday. We're looking at more commercial options. You never said a word to us about wanting an option. Okay. The only option we knew.
I didn't ask anybody. So let me. Let me.
But that department adopted option C. That's what I kept hearing. Option C. There's no option C in the policy. It doesn't say strike this line or that line. And then you all of a sudden come up and say, policy's gone. Conservation's gone. Direct priority's gone. And they were so impressed by this, they came in with commercial options. Okay? This wouldn't pass the smell test any more than the man in the moon. And I have one question for you.
Okay.
Was this department misleading us the last time we met, or did they mislead us in?
Absolutely not. So the commissioners asked for Ron to provide a recommendation in testimony right there. They asked him what his recommendation was, and he gave one. I was not aware of that. That wasn't planned. That was Commissioner Grable asking Ron what he thought.
So you don't think that Commissioner Grable...
I have no idea what happened.
So he could write this out.
I'm not going to do this. I don't follow Ron around. I don't know what his schedule is. I'm telling you what I know.
So
you can choose to believe me or you can choose not to, Tim. I really don't care. I really don't care. Because at the end of the day, I can look myself in the mirror and know that I'm being honest and truthful.
I had no recommendation. Did I provide a recommendation at that testimony? Did I provide any sort of recommendation? They asked Ron. Ron gave his opinion. I don't know what else to tell you other than that.
Right.
Felt like you gave everything you gave us.
Yeah,
that's always the same. The same proposal you gave us just a few days before that.
So, anyways, I'm going to move on. So, let's go into what our guidance is for this year. So, that's the blue sheet. I would have got this to you guys as soon as I possibly could. It's hot off the press. It was just finalized just a few hours ago. So, as you mentioned, Tim, the motion was made to adopt option C. Okay? There were some amendments to that in terms of they weren't adopting option C as it was expressed on the board. It wasn't going to be that our management objective was for 18.3 or 19.3 on the Nacelle River. It's that we would actively manage to not exceed 20% on the Willapa River and actively manage to not exceed 20% on the Nacelle River. We will also actively manage to not exceed a 10% total impact for Chuck. Okay, so the first amendment to that was striking item number 6 under the species-specific guidance. I believe that's on page 8 of the policy. Is that correct, Barb? Is it 8? I think it's page 8. Page 6, I'm sorry. Page 6 of your policy, and it has 3 parts. A being the 14% impact rate to Willapa and Nacelle stocks. B is the 2T2U, no commercial fisheries prior to September 16th. And C is the no commercial fisheries in the South End prior to September 7th. So that is where we're at today. The second amendment that was added to that is option C had a 3 fish bag limit. They gave the department the discretion to decide on bag limits. Given our outcomes and management objectives and what we're looking at for this year. They didn't want to expressly say what that bag limit should be. So that's where we're at. So those are our objectives. 20% on Willapa, 20% on Nacelle, I see Marlisa. 10% on Chunk. So that's what we're shooting for. Okay, go ahead, Marlisa.
So we have not set down the priority for Chinook for wreck fisheries.
Nope.
And there is no way to give us a priority on that species in the bay if you let the commercials go in early and often.
Okay.
So you cannot have the two go hand in hand. You can't fish them all out and then let them go in and have a whack at an empty pond.
Yep.
So keeping that in mind, I cannot support sending the nets in prior to September 8th in the south end of the bay.
Okay.
And if we're going to have discretion on bag limits, I'd like 4 fish bag limit in the NEMA. We have plenty of fish to allow it.
Okay.
And I know the intent was to decrease the bag limit for everyone else, but we don't need it there.
Okay.
I think that Commissioner McIsaac was looking for ways to carve every extra impact out for commercial use, and I find it to be immorally wrong.
Okay. Tim?
This is kind of crazy, but confirm if I'm correct. Usually when you amend a written document, a policy, you say, okay, we're going to strike out this, strike out that, sort of like they say we're supposed to do it here. So we can have an intelligent conversation. You put this in here, and it doesn't quite jive with what my memory was, nor does it jive with my conversation.
That has been edited. That document has been edited by commissioners.
That's fine. Which commissioners?
I believe it's gone back and forth with Isaac, McIsaac, and Carpenter a few.
Okay. So
the commission has seen it as well as, and Tammy has been coordinating that. Barb and Tammy have been working.
I want to make it clear here that you did not present a written amendment.
No.
No. So.
No, I
didn't. And they didn't present a written amendment.
No, they did not.
So.
No.
All right. So here's my point with all this. It says in this blue sheet that they came in and items number 6 of the false species producing guidance, which is those three.
Yep.
They stood that down for a year. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's my
understanding. So does that say that you have to move the nets again? You
no.
have?
No, it doesn't.
So any decision that you make...
Is that my discretion? Department's discretion.
I'm not even going to agree with that, because okay. you're going to have to pass it in a whack, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So it's up to all of us.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is nothing that came out of that commission that says you shall move those nets into the north at this time.
No.
You shall do away with the rec priority. You shall.
Rec priority was never, it's not even part of it. That's dangerous.
So, that gets me that far. So I'm just trying to figure out what the rules are here.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. The rules as I understand them are is that the policy is still in place except for Section 6,
right.
which is the commercial dates. And the 14% harvest rate will manage right. to its 20%.
So the rec priority is still in play.
Absolutely.
Okay. So define for me, if you will, what the rec priority is. How would you determine? I don't want to criticize you for adopting one of these boys' policies here and say it's violating.
No, I'll be quite upfront. Rec priority was time and space. The rec priority was eliminating the commercial fishery. During the time when gear conflict was most prevalent, that there would be no netting in 2T and 2U during the recreational
season. So is it fair to say that from that standpoint, if the commercial fleet was granted more of the limiter, the natural spawning impacts, that you could do that and still call that a rec priority?
Yeah.
So you think you can give them all the impacts?
No, said they get first shot. So you
they get first shot.
No, the recreational fishery starts first. You got to remember that the recreational fishery starts either in late June or early July,
and fishes until whatever point in time. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, but the problem is the way we've always defined rec priority was who got
where was that ever defined? Where was that ever defined? Does that say anything about that in the policy?
Yes.
Where does it say that? Where does it say that the allocations? Where does it say that you have to have so many or they have to be one less?
Always. That's exactly the discussion when they did the...
That's where it's always gone. That's where people have always taken it. They've tried to define priority in their own way, saying it's in catch or it has to be in the majority of impacts.
No, it was also done with after the department made the request of a nod, which is what they did now, a fancy form of a nod. And they came back and said 9 and 11. 11 in the recs, 9.
Okay. That was the guidance last year.
Impacts on NORS to determine whether it was a rec priority state or it did not. That was clear as the bell they did that. What you're telling me is you...
That was the guidance for last year. That was the guidance for last year.
Okay, well,
rec priority is not defined in the policy, nor is it defined in any document.
If it doesn't, it's not defined. It doesn't
exist. It's not defined. It's a policy statement that it's rec priority. That there's a rec priority portion of harvest.
So, how many impacts would you give the nets before you would?
I don't know. That can be judged by the number of impacts. Their fishery is going to utilize much more impacts than you need for the rec fishery because the rec fishery. Is much more selective.
The original.
Martin, this is an advisory group meeting. You'll get your chance to talk. You'll get your chance to talk. So, all right. Moving on, let's get to the one thing I want to touch on before we get into the models to look at for this evening is this white sheet. This white sheet, and for those of you in the public, this was sent out to the advisory group for them to look at in preparation for this meeting. If any of you would like to see the electronic format, talk to Barb, and after the meeting she can get that to you. But you've got a copy of it right here. So there was I received a bunch of emails about that the layered gear restrictions wasn't very clear when we did it at the public meeting. There was a lot of confusion about where it was and all this sort of stuff. So Barb and Damon worked really hard on putting this together in a short amount of time down in the lobby of the hotel to get out to you folks so we all understand what we're talking about here. Did any of the advisors, have you all looked at that? Have you looked at the layered gear restrictions?
Yeah.
Is there any need to to delve into this deeper. Does everybody understand what we're talking about?
No.
Do we want a few more minutes to go over this?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So here's the issue. In one section of the Nemanja River, and we'll get to where that section is in a minute, pamphlet definitions. So these are pulled right from, these are SNPs right from page 10 and 11 of the pamphlet. This is the definition for anti-snagging. This is the definition of selective gear rules. The problem becomes, right here, and what Mark's highlighted in yellow, terminal fishing gear is restricted to a lure or bait. And then selective gear rules, bait is prohibited. Those two things are contradictory. Okay? And it led to, as I mentioned, there was a court case where somebody received a ticket here, and they successfully fought it, and it was thrown out because the judge said that these rules are too difficult to understand. So we need to simplify this. Okay, go ahead.
Just a quick question on the, I was at the Ridgefield meeting for the Columbia River, and they were talking about going to go to barbed hooks. Is that something that's going everywhere, or is that... You're not seeing that over here.
That was commission action just for the Columbia River.
Okay.
Just for the Columbia River.
Okay.
Larry, that's my understanding. Okay. So moving on, next page. So this is from page 29, Middle Nemanja River there. And you can see for the alt species, we've got selective gear rules. So during this time frame, August 16th through November 30th, we've got the anti-snagging rule. So both of these are in place at the same time. They're layered, and they're contradictory to each other, right? Remember that. Okay, so moving on. This is the section of the river we're talking about. So this is the A-line, Nemanja A-line bridge right here. So we're talking about this section of the river from here all the way upstream.
You're talking about the Middle Nemanja River? Yes.
Middle Nemanja. This is the A-line bridge way up here. Here's 101 all the way up here.
So it reminds
me. Middle Nemanja kicks off right here, comes all the way around. Lyle, do you remember the river mile for this?
6.4.
So 6.4. So quite a ways up. Keep in mind, folks, this section isn't even a salmon fishing section. What this is about is it's open for game fish and trout fishing. Probably there's maybe one or two or three or four guys at most.
There's coho up there.
Use this section.
Yes, there's coho in that section.
Not during this time frame, though, what we're talking about.
Yes, there is. About, what's the date again?
What we're talking about is all. It's not open for salmon. This section of the river is not open for salmon. Okay? All this is open for is for game fish, and the problem becomes is we want some protection for steelhead and other salmon species that they might encounter while they're fishing for trout.
So you're trying to have a no-bait rule. That's
the intent there, is we wouldn't want to fish for bait when really the main thing we're looking at really there is steelhead. There would be maybe some coho encounters and whatnot, but steelhead is the big one.
Well, you know, I can't support that. I think that being able to fish with bait up there in a small area, and we happen to have the only river in Pacific County that's right now just thriving with steelhead.
It's not a steelhead fishery. This is... Okay.
I understand, but there's steelhead to be caught up there, and
But we're trying to protect steelhead. This is wild steelhead, and there isn't, right? We fish for hatchery. We have... Our steelhead programs in Willow Bay are segregated. We have a hatchery run based from Chambers Creek, early returning, and we have wild steelhead, which we close the season, right? We don't prosecute fisheries on our wild steelhead. They have not made the statement, a long time.
In what river?
It's an aggregate of the whole.
Well, my river's loaded with them.
Maybe this year.
Yeah.
It appears that there's a lot of steelhead. We're getting really good numbers this year. Things are looking really good. And there's a possibility that we might make a statement this year. I mean, it's real early. We're crossing our fingers. But the fact of the matter is we haven't made a statement for wild steelhead in Willow Bay for a long time. I can't remember the last time. I think it was like once in 20 years.
Well, very few people fish up there. It's behind closed gates. You have to walk in. And trout fishing, too. You know, they like to bite on...
You can almost drive to the spot. If you come into the sea line from the South Nemanja, that's all DNR roads I was in there today.
The bridge is gone,
however. The bridge is gone. You can drive almost all the way to this location.
You can get there on the DNR road system.
On the DNR road system from the South Nemanja.
Interesting.
But the bridge is not there anymore. It is a whole bridge.
And Marley says we did that. that would be not consistent with everything else that we have in the handbook for freshwater. This was really just an oversight.
So basically,
it should have been removed when we were doing.
So basically, you're opening it only to lures and flies.
It's that way now. It's bait prohibited. It's supposed to be, like we talked about at that meeting. My reading of the anti-snagging rule is bait. It does say bait or lure, but that would be preempted by the selective gear rules that says no bait is allowed. But that's not how the judge took it.
So this is just upstream of that, Chad.
This is just upstream of that.
6.4 upstream.
All the way to the headline.
So from 6.4 downstream, it's still anti-snagging, bait is allowed.
No, they're not overlapped. This is the only place where this still occurs.
Let's say, but from downstream of it, if it's yes. as usual.
Yeah. Is this anti-snagging downstream of that only?
No.
Or is selective bait rules only?
No, it's not just night. It's just night closure and 6.0.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason is this section has salmon in it, so, and I understand,
right, folks, I understand.
I think one of the things that we're going to want to do, moving through the comprehensive review process, is lay out all our freshwater regs and go through them. I think we need to have a meeting where we go through them one by one. A lot of this stuff has been in here for years, hasn't been looked at, you know, gone, multiple bios have put in their two cents about what should be protected here and what should be protected there. I think we should have a comprehensive, one of these meetings that we have should be a comprehensive look at all the freshwater regs, and we should go through those and make sure that we're being consistent, we've lined them up, you know, that everything is the way, you know, set the way to meet our objectives. Exactly. We won't be able to do anything with that until the process comes forward, but I think it would be good for this advisory body to go through that and have some recommendations there, so when we get to that point, we'll have some of that work.
Exceptions are erratic and conservation concerns. Conservation needs.
Yeah. So anyways, that's kind of the layered gear restriction piece. Does anybody have any comment to that? Anything we want to touch on before we get into the models?
I'm seeing none.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to the modeling.
Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah, go ahead, Norm.
One, have we had any resignations from this committee since this past Saturday?
No.
Okay. No.
Hey, you want that one?
I want to know if there's any resignations.
Oh, okay.
Recent resignations?
No.
Before you get to the models, I was reading them, or just kind of glancing at them. A question in the first column on each model. It says Stat Week 2017 dates. Is that a typo? They're all like that.
Oh, jeez.
All five of them are
like
that.
It's 19. All the dates are correct. I just didn't change the
date. That's why I'm asking, because I checked the dates for the calendar. I thought perhaps it was a typo.
That's
it is.
So I wanted to clear that up. Now I
apologize. Thank you for pointing that out.
But also for the public, so that there's no confusion on that.
Absolutely.
So this is the column I'm talking about, folks. On each one of these sheets, the very first one, at the top row, there's a date in there.
Good job.
And before we start dealing with these, I would just like to go back to the policy for a moment. Okay? In that, I do believe that there was a recreational priority put in this policy, and I do believe it was mostly spelled out in one way or another. And that is in subparagraph 4, when it talks about fishery management, specifically about fall Chinook, we're talking about an impact rate of approximately 2%.
3.2 with
room. Yeah, 3.2%, I'm sorry. With the potential of that increasing as time went on, and I'm on page 4 of the policy at the very bottom. And then as we go to bullet point 1 on page 5, it states manage Chinook salmon for an enhanced recreational fishing season to increase participation and or catch, including consideration of increased daily bag limits, earlier openings, multiple rods, and other measures. I just want that read out, and I just want to clarify my position that I do believe that this policy spells out some specifics for an enhanced recreational fishery. Thank you.
No, well said, Norm. I agree with that. Yeah, I didn't touch on that when I spoke.
Well, I'm not trying to contradict you.
I should have. No, thank you, Norm.
I just wanted to have a clarification.
No, I appreciate that. No. Tim?
These models that you have out in front of us, correct me if I'm wrong, but my memory of the models that you showed us before had over here on the left-hand column a percentage of the recreational and a percentage of the commercial harvest.
Do you still have that? We're going to get to it in just a second. I haven't got to that.
Did it come out of this thing right here?
Yeah.
No. Didn't it used to be something right here?
No.
No.
Well, no, it's in. So what you want to look at is you want to look at the green summary. That's where that allocation proportions are. So that's what I'm just going to right now.
Okay. And as we go, just to compliment.
What's that?
Just as we go, to compliment Norm. We've been fishing off this thing since 2015. And tonight was the first time someone raised the notion there's no definition of pregnant. That is really... Thank you.
Okay. So now we're on the green sheet, folks. I'm on the back side where it says 2019 fishery description of above model proposal. Okay, looks like this. The only green piece of paper you have. Okay, so I'm just going to walk down. As I said, four proposals were sent in by the commercial sector. Just late last night. We've been busy updating those. There were a few caveats. One, it didn't have the correct frame run in it just because of the model that they were working off of was the older one. So we had to update that. So now we're working off the Coho model 1918. And those numbers, and that's the mid option of where we're sitting now, if folks will remember from the ocean auction discussions. And so those numbers have been updated. They're in the top in blue in each of the model runs. We're looking at, under this model run, escaping to the terminal area, 82,768 hatchery coho and 56,300, and my eyes are too old to read that number, 300 and some natural fish. So, just kind of going down through the models, we talked about what the management objectives are, so each of these models was made to fit those 20% caps for Chinook and the 10% cap. They all do that. Somehow leave more room than others. Models 1, 2, and number 5 are all a two-fish bag in the recreational fisheries, both marine and freshwater. All fisheries in Wilton Bay, marine and commercial, are marked selective. So all the options that you have in front of you are released while at Chinook or offshore Chinook. They all have the marine recreational season going to Area 2-1 rules on August 1. We do have it on here. So the same sort of paradigm as we used last year in terms of chum harvest, which was to take those fish on the front end, and then after the chum window, we would release them. So that's been working well for us, and you know, we've never missed the 10% on chum, so I think I like the way that's working. Models 3 and 4 are a three-fish bag in the marine area and the freshwater as well. They all use, in terms of the commercial fishery, they all have some entanglement time in them. Mostly any fisheries prior to 9/15. Some of those have some additional days in view that have entanglements. We've pretty much fished through September almost every year until the chum window with entanglements in 2U. So that's something we would like to have some conversation about. So we can look at the front side of that green sheet to see the outcomes of each of those models. So model 1 results in a 15.4 impact to Willapa River, a 19.1 to Nacelle, 99 to Chum. None of these modeled options provide for the Chinook escapement. We don't have a escapement crossing the bar. Our objective, our main conservation objective, is to stay within that 20%. They all reach escapement for Coho and for Chum. You can see the moving left to right there under policy priorities for Chinook. There's a number there for Rack. Keep in mind that that's the combination of both the marine and the freshwater. Okay? And then the numbers there for the commercial. Keep in mind that's just, those aren't impacts. Those are just total harvested fish, landed fish. And then we have the allocations by sector in the next couple of columns for both Chinook and Coho and the number of days fished. So I really don't want to walk through these piece by piece unless people really want me to. We can do that. I apologize. It's not my normal process to get you guys models here right now tonight. That's not normally how I would do things. That's not how I like it being done. I prefer that we get to have these models done much farther ahead of time and get them out so you guys can have a chance to look at them and come, you know, prepared with some stuff to talk. I apologize for that. There's really no way to avoid it. We haven't had the time to put these together prior to just a couple of hours ago. So with that being said, so they all meet the objectives. They all have different amounts of tangle net or not tangle net. The sky isn't falling. There isn't all of a sudden commercial fisheries being placed in 2T in the first part of August. There is a model run. I believe it is model run 2 has 2 days and 2N towards the end of August. Stat week 34. Model run 3 has 1 day and N in the last week. And model run 5 has 1 day each and N and M in the last week of August and 1 day in N and M, all using tangle nets in that stat week 36, which would be the first week of September. So, go ahead, Tim.
First, I'd make a request that all these models. Who produced model 5?
We looked at that.
What's we?
Me and Bart and Damon put that together this afternoon.
That's the part that it created, proposal number 5.
Yeah.
So at the top it says commercial proposal. So the first four.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't make that.
Have you provided the commercial sector the model, the spreadsheet that allowed them to do this? Or did they just give you numbers?
Yes.
You supplied them with this model?
Yeah.
Would you mind supplying the rest of us with that model?
No, no problem. Get it to you right away.
Okay. Now, here's the other thing.
Haven't had anybody ask.
Yeah.
You want to work the model?
Yeah.
I got no problem. I've never said that. They asked. I sent it to them. No one's asked.
Well, we were in all the conversations, so I don't know what happened.
I can tell you what happened. Andy asked me if he could have a model, and I said yes, and I sent it to him. No one else has ever asked me to do that. I've sent them out before. I've sent them out in previous years.
Well, I guess that's fine.
I sent them to
Dave. Yeah, no, it's fine. You've got no problem. Bart will send them to you first.
I sent them to Dave.
Yeah,
Dave asked for them. Yeah, your brother asked for them, and we sent them to him, too.
Yeah, I
understand
that.
Yeah, no problem. We'll get them on to you tomorrow.
All I have to tell you is that you both we came in here and just got sideswiped by that.
Yeah. I know. It sucks. I apologize for that. It's not the way I would like to do it.
So that handles my request.
Yep.
Okay. So we'll send these models out.
Absolutely.
Now, the other thing that I have is the green paper, which is helpful. I like this type of thing.
Yeah.
But something fell off it.
What's that?
The percentage of impacts on NORS by recreational and commercial sector.
Okay.
Yeah, it felt. This. I'm going to go back and check all the ones I've got.
But
all of a sudden, that mysteriously disappeared.
We didn't have that on there.
It wasn't on the other one.
We talked about it, but it's here. I can show you.
Oh, I can show you.
It's right here. It's on this model. It's not expressed as a percentage. So I'll show you right now.
So here's my question.
Yep.
Didn't we not have a box on this thing when it was 9 and 11?
Yes.
It would turn red, okay?
That was for last year's guidance. Yep.
Yeah. See, it disappeared.
Yeah, because that's not our guidance for this year. It's not an objective. The 11 to 9 is not an objective. That was a one-year,
so allocation, 2018. Recreational and commercial funds factor.
The allocation's on here.
No, the allocation that was expressly given to us in commission guidance in 2018 is not part of 2019. That guidance was only for that year.
I know, but...
And they didn't provide us any guidance on allocation.
The green one.
I wasn't saying it was legally required. I was saying it was something that I can use to easily go back.
It's on the green one.
No, we
can... It's the last... third set of columns from the end.
No, no, that's in hatch refresh. That's not in hatch.
No, I know.
So what you're wanting to look at is right here. Okay, Lyle, scroll up so I can show everybody what we're talking about. Scroll up. So under natural Chinook, total Wilton Bay origin, you come down here into the total. Okay, so 393 in whatever model this is. Okay. This is model 5. So 393, scroll down. And then for the recreational sector, it's right there, 232.
Can we get those spelled out in percentages?
Yeah, we can. I can't do that right here, right now, this second, but we can get them out to you if you'd like to see them. Go ahead, Andy.
So at the last meeting, you said that, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but at a 3-fish bag, at the rate the recreational fishery has been fishing, they would be at 7.3%.
Yep.
A 2-fish bag would be 6.3%.
Yep.
So that's all they need. So that's basically all they need to execute their fishery.
Yeah, at a 3-fish bag, the model estimates that they need 7.3% on the upper river fish.
So the prior year,
and 3.1 on ASL.
The 11 and 9 came out the prior year, they thought they needed more.
Yeah, we were working on only 15 and 16 harvest rates. They were much higher.
Were boom years.
Yeah.
They were fishing down below on Columbia River fish, and it made it look great. And I'm sure it was a great fishery. But a little bit of reality is saying, we're talking about Willapa fish now. They don't need all the impacts to execute their fishery.
Okay.
And it still shows here. In every model,
it shows priority.
Their Chinook numbers are clearly larger than ours.
That is correct.
Okay?
Every model run we have here tonight has the recreational sector harvesting more Chinook.
One of the intentions of the policy was not to enhance the recreational fishery so much that it would diminish the commercial fishery.
That was the final first part.
That's right.
Okay.
That's why we worded it.
Okay. So, a recreational priority for an enhanced recreational fishing season and increased participation would allow for those numbers to grow. And this policy was always intended to do that.
From 3.2. You're correct.
Up until whatever it is, you have a priority for coho. I'm not going to talk to them because this never goes well. So, a priority on coho for the commercial fisheries. Mm-hmm. This policy was designed to give recreational marine and freshwater fisheries an opportunity to have a meaningful and active and growing fishery on Chinook.
Every one of these model runs has either a 2 or 3-fish recreational bag and the full season. Plus, 2-bowl was extended in 2015 to incorporate more areas, and we opened sections of the Nacelle, the Willapa, and the Nema system earlier in order to go after those hatchery Chinook. That was all done in 2015.
And closed down a large section of the marine fishery for the guys out there so they can't fish that. And if you're going to try to have an expanded fishery, there's only several ways that you can do that. You can give them more time on the water. You can give them a time to fish on the water when there's actually fish in it instead of fishing on an empty pond, which is what the poor marine fishery guys dealt with for the 50 years prior to the 2015 policy. Great, they have all the time they want to fish out there, but it's always after the gillnetters have cleaned it out. So if you allow them to go back in early, one, you are going to eliminate the naturalization of those early fish getting a chance to get to fresh water and have some early spawning happening for those fish to renaturalize, which we are trying, and correct me if I'm wrong, but conservation is still part of your mantra, even though I doubt that that's anything other than just on paper by the results that we're seeing here. Okay, we have conservation to deal with. We are trying to establish more of a natural run timing instead of letting them go out there and catch all those early ones because, well, there's no coho out there right now, so it's not going to affect their impacts. You also choke off all the freshwater fishing. What little might happen in August if you let them do that? That means there's zero. There's zero.
So having one day of gill netting and two end will wipe out the
impact. It says right here what you catch.
Those are early fish that are headed into fresh water. And okay. If you take them out, there's nothing to take their place. In the last 4 years, we have seen progressively an increase in Chinook into fresh water as early as August 1st. And this is the first time since the policy. There hasn't been anything prior to
that. Is there a model in front of you that has any commercial fishery opportunity beginning on August 1st?
But it's in August.
Is there any model in front of you that has any commercial fishery anywhere in the bay beginning August 1st?
No, I don't know. You just gave these to us.
I know. We're looking through them right now. There is none.
So you have fisheries in August in 2N and 2M.
Look, guys, normally we would have had three or four meetings now to discuss this.
Okay. You also have early August 2 days in 2N in the other policy, and then again.
Yep.
And you have
those are proposals. What's your proposal, Marlisa?
I don't know. We weren't given a chance to have any input, Chad.
What
and
do you
I'll
mean you're
that.
Not given a chance to have any input?
We didn't have any input.
I didn't ask Andy to do this. Andy did it on himself, trying to get prepared for tonight with some stuff for us to look at.
Thank you for that, Andy.
I appreciate you starting the conversation.
All of us have valuable time spent.
Okay,
let's do that.
Then that's what I'm here for.
Perhaps,
I'm not here to debate what happened.
Perhaps let's email to the rest of us that are advisors saying, hey, we just gave the commercial guys an opportunity to present a model.
I didn't give the commercial guys anything. Andy sent those in last night on his own. I didn't ask him to do that, nor did I coordinate or call him and say, hey, start to do these models. I didn't do that.
Do you think it would have been prudent for you to have got them done soon enough before we all spent our time, and I drove 2.5 hours to get here, so that we could look at something that we had presented ourselves?
That would have been great, Marlisa. That would have been great. But we've been a little busy.
Go ahead, Andy.
And I'll come back to you.
On all of these models, they more than meet the conservation.
Okay. Yeah, not one of these models has a higher than a 16% impact rate of Willow River Chinook. Not one.
So
they range from 14.7% all the way to, I think, the highest one we have is 15.9. And I think that's a good thing. We have had an issue with holding at the 20%. Bringing that down and going to 16 provides us with a little bit of buffer. I'm tired of missing it, and I don't want to do that anymore. I think we're finally getting some resolution in the data, that we've got much better understanding of what the recreational impact is going to be. We've had a very good understanding of what the commercial impact is going to be. Remember, in every year, against both Wilba and Nacelle, the commercial sector has been held to equal to or below their preseason prediction. Every time. They have not exceeded it. Not once. You all have that data. It's in your advisory book from the Saturday, November 17th workshop where we talk about that. So, anyways, I want to get on to going through some of this stuff, seeing if any folks have any proposals, having any questions about the model runs. Like I said, I apologize. I would like to have these done much sooner. I didn't get done with the commission until Saturday afternoon. Okay, we only have so much time. This takes time to put these together and put these together right. We worked very diligently to get these done.
I'm sorry, Bob. No, that's okay. I'd like to clarify one thing.
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, Marlise is talking about us going in and wiping out the whole bay.
I don't want to get into that.
No, I just want to clarify one thing. They had fisheries on the outside of us. They could have fished all they wanted. And that they could have fished where we was fishing, too. So, I mean,
guys,
that's a fallacy.
Guys, literally, I got it. 50 minutes here, and I'm getting on a plane to BFMC. I want to discuss proposals and what we may look at, because I'm going to go down there and provide some inputs into the FRAM model when that thing is done. And I need to know where folks are standing, where what folks are looking at, what folks would like to see. And I got Tim, and then I got Norm.
Apparently, the commercial sector has a better understanding of what was meant by the amendments to the policy, because I was waiting to come here and find out what the hell it is you thought happened.
Yeah, it was crazy, wasn't it?
Somebody gave them enough confidence they could see these models. And what I'm finding is that they knew something we didn't know. And that's one of the reasons why I will defend myself about presenting a new policy.
But with
that all being said, can you tell me, the last 2 years I think we raised a cable goal in the north. Okay?
Wilbur River, yeah, we have it. Yeah.
What does these models do to the, if you got a proposal sitting here that you're confident?
We don't have that sort of resolution where we can predict just Willapa River escapement. We can predict the overall escapement, but we can't look at just what might be at Willapa. Right? What might come back to Willapa.
So
the resolution you get here is at the bottom of the model where this is expected escapement, and that's the expected escapement for Willapa. But we can only do it as Willapa North combined, and then NEMA Palex combined, and Nacelle Bear combined.
Well, that's so when I say Willapa, the north.
Yeah, I know. I was just trying to make sure I was clear. So it's not just Willapa on its own, it's Willapa.
So if I take these home and think about it, how would I decide whether one of these is going to reverse our trend on reaching escapement goal in the north?
All you can look at is just that expected escapement value right there and see what it's going to take for that year. We don't have that sort of resolution to look forward. Nor is that the purpose of our preseason planning.
So you think the escapement is going to grow?
Under most of these model options, you'll see Wilbur escapement and Nacelle escapement is pretty good. I don't think it makes it for Nacelle in all options, but it's pretty close.
You mean on this side of the line?
Good.
Yeah.
Chad?
Hey, Chad, something that might be helpful, and probably not now, between now and when you go down there, but is to provide a kind of estimate that might predict what those pieces are, show what the variances is, and the challenges with trying to predict those specific sectors within this game and others. And then you could just, I mean, it would be a good place to all start.
Yeah. So if folks would like to take a second and, you know, review them, have any questions for me about them? Yeah,
please.
Go ahead. Norm, go ahead. I'm sorry, Norm.
That's okay.
I know.
Sometimes I step up.
Yeah, no, I know.
A couple of things about, excuse me, folks, please. I did try to stay quiet while everyone else was talking. I would ask for the same courtesy, please. Thank you. In all these models, we're staying with the control zone.
So, great question. Thank you for bringing that up, because that was something I did want to talk about. So I mentioned earlier tonight that we don't have an official FRAM model run yet. We have talked about in previous meetings that the management objectives that we've got from NOAA are a 38% on lower Columbia River naturals. That's a total exploitation rate gap. So all fisheries between Alaska to California, anywhere lower Columbia River naturals are affected, the total exploitation cannot exceed 38%. Okay? In some of the preliminary modeling, I work with our staff, who is a Derek Dapp, is our FRAM Chinook modeler for the department. We've been looking at that control zone. We've also been looking at a lot of the other stocks of concern and indicator stocks. There is some thoughts out there that things like Stilla Guamish, the 8% impact rate to Stilla Guamish or exploitation rate to Stilla Guamish, to Mid Hood Canal, we will bump against those constraints before we get to the 38% for the lower Columbia River naturals. So, depending on what option run, and I believe, look, that's at the low option, there's like a 0.5% that may be left. We don't have treaty inputs yet, so, I mean, this is very preliminary. But it may be that we have that when the ocean options are settled, if they come in because of hitting Steel Guamish or something else, there may be a little bit of room there under that 38% impact on Lower Columbia Naturals. Okay? So what's going to be important for us to remember is the higher we go with the marine bag limit, the higher our impact is on Lower Columbia River Naturals, right? The more fish we're going to take into our bag means the more encounters we're going to have, the more tulies that are going to be dead in the bottom of a boat, right? If that were to be open. The less, the lower the impact we have. So there is a possibility, and I've always said, the control zone, we did the control zone instead of just moving the line back to where it was, so we have the flexibility to turn that off or on, given the situation. If there was room available, then we can turn that switch on. So I think we want to consider that. We want to have that in our back pocket. And what I want to have some conversation with folks about tonight, what's more important in the marine area? Is it a 3 or a 4 fish bag and a control zone close? Or is it better to maybe have a 1 or a 2 fish bag if there's room that would open the control zone? And I'm only saying this, throwing it out hypothetically, if there's room. I'm going to have to make a decision on the fly while I'm down there over the next 5 days about what goes into that package, right? And I'll have an understanding of what our bag limit might be and what those impacts would be in order to make it fit. But I think what I want to have some conversation about if folks want the 3 fish bag limit and that doesn't fit, but at a 2 fish bag limit, it might be able to open the control zone. Where are folks' priority? Would they rather have the control zone, or would they rather have the extra fish in the bag? So I really wish Tim and Ross wouldn't have walked out when we had that conversation. But I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on that, because I will have to. That'll be a consideration.
Well, since I asked a question,
yep.
You stole my thunder.
I'm sorry.
No, because I'm actually going to take it even further. With the state of Puget Sound fisheries right now, and the possibility, I'm not a probability, but the possibility that we might not have an agreement in Puget Sound, that means that we have a problem in the ocean with especially Mid-Hood Canal impacts.
Absolutely.
Because it's my understanding from the training I've gotten that a lot of the impacts that occur in Mid-Hood Canal are in the summer.
Guess
and they
what?
Are on the coast.
Guess
and
what we have in Willapa Bay Marine Recreational? We've got an impact in Mid-Hood Canal, too.
There it is.
I swear. Can't find a stock that we don't at least get one recovery of at some point in time.
If that fishery is impacted, if the Puget Sound fishery is impacted, yeah, it could very well have ramifications in the ocean, which means that all the numbers that we use in not only just this model, but in Grace Harbor, the whole coastal system, may be being reworked down in Roanoke Park.
Maybe. Yeah.
And so I don't see another saltwater guy here other than out here in the crowd behind us.
I already know what Art's opinion is.
And my opinion as a saltwater guy is that if I can fish that control zone, I can live with a 2 fish bag.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Any other questions would you like to
say again?
Yeah, say again. I'm sorry, I just want to make sure.
If I can fish in the control zone,
that's more important.
If I can fish in the control zone with a 2 fish bag, that's more important than a 3 fish bag.
With the control zone club.
With the control zone club.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't fish the control zone, and I don't have an opinion on that, but what I do have an opinion on is why is the ocean wreck fishery not being asked to fish selectively in August out there, or September? Well, let's just use September then, when most of our fish are out there. So how would that change available impacts in any model if we were able to put that together? And I know that Larry, who's already sitting up over there, is wincing in his seat because nobody wants to attack the ocean fishery bag limits or their impacts.
So the ocean fisheries are decided on council floor. That's where the ocean fisheries are debated. There was a public hearing. Mm-hmm. You were all noticed of when it was. I showed it up on the screen in both meetings prior to us going there.
I'm not done there, though. Let me finish, Chad, before you go.
Go ahead.
So I was notified of those meetings, but it was too late to make public comment on their website, and without making it in a timely manner, it can't be brought up on their floor as an option. And my question to you, Larry, and to you, Chad, is why in God's name, as a department and working together for conservation, have you not brought it up yourself?
The Mark Select Fishery?
Yes, in the ocean fishery out there.
Because of the rates, the mark rates.
Mark
rates are low.
You've got way more
mortality associated with
releasing more hatchery fish out there.
Doesn't matter how low it is. If it would help give us 10 impacts that could open the control zone, I think they should bear some of the burden.
Okay.
The burden of conservation and make...
Okay. One fish bag limit in the ocean. One fish.
Yes.
But they're not fishing selectively.
Okay.
You're asking us to take a hit with our bag limits everywhere. I think that it should be looked at. And I would like, as what you I view, from a public standpoint, not just as an advisor, that you are my advocate.
Absolutely.
And you are doing a very poor job. It is. And I want you to know that that's true, that I feel it, and so do most of the fishers in the state of Washington, that we are not represented here as recreational fishers.
Okay.
When you look at the big...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't...
Now I'm down to a half an hour. I need to talk about model proposals for tonight. This isn't the meeting to discuss ocean options. Okay, I apologize, Marlisa, but I can't let this go on. I've got to get some work done tonight. I need something out of this meeting. Ross, Tim, I'm sorry you guys stepped out of the room when we just had this little bit of conversation because you missed something important, and I want to rehash it for you. So, as I mentioned earlier, there is a possibility in the FRAM models. We've already talked about that Lower Columbia Naturals are restricted to a 38%. That's the management objective for this year, total, Alaska to California, everywhere. Lower Columbia Naturals need to be impacted at a rate equal to or less than 38%. In talking with some of the modelers and all that stuff, we don't have an official model run. We don't have treaty inputs yet. But there is the thought that there may be that we will bump up against other limiters or stocks of concern before we hit Lower Columbia River Naturals. I.e., depending on what ocean option is taken, there may that the percentage on Lower Columbia Naturals may be lower than that 38% because it would be restricted by some other constraint. So, there may be a little bit of room here. And part of what I asked the group and wanted to take some feedback on is I'm going to have to make a decision pretty quick and fast while I'm down there. If what I wanted to hear from some of the advisors and from the public is, would they sacrifice bag limit in the marine area in order to open up the control zone? So if I can open the control zone with a one fish bag in the marine area, is that worth it? Or if it's a two fish bag limit? If it's a three fish bag limit? So, i.e., are you willing to take a little bit less of a bag limit in the marine area in order to have the control zone, or would you rather stick with the bag limit, and if it doesn't fit under the control zone, then it doesn't fit. We still want our three fish or whatever. So that's what I want to take some comments on.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you didn't have your partner.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this the best I can, guys.
I appreciate that. I just want to know if is the department willing to... everybody's worried about their own little thing. I'm worried about getting egg tape.
Yeah.
You know, we've got low numbers this
egg
year.
Egg tape is obviously...
I would like to see some, you know, I think we could trim maybe some days off this, off the front end of this commercial season if, you know, and stick with the two fish bag or, you know, I mean, because I think that's going to be our problem.
Egg tape?
You know, egg tape, because we don't have Fort Strick to backfill everywhere else.
Okay, so you would like to see commercial fisheries less on the Chinook time
I think,
and a lower bag limit for freshwater
it would,
and marine in
we
order
could make
to
some time.
Egg tape?
Yeah.
Did I summarize that?
But I also would like to, I'd like to see some in freshwater as well.
Okay.
I think we get the escapement.
Yeah, and I'll come right back to you, Lance. I just want to wrap up this. Ross, did you have any comments on the bag limit control zone conversation?
I don't think these models are well vetted. I don't think that we have enough information to give you an answer.
Okay. Tim, do you have
two hours on option A, B, C, and D. Okay. The commission adopted option C.
Mm-hmm. But not urgency
and permission to talk about anything else. I've never been treated like this in my life, and I've been treated pretty poor. Never like this.
Okay.
I will make up an answer when I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay. Tim? If my memory serves me correctly, the commercial fisheries after September 8th encountered a certain amount of tules and so on that are on the way to the Columbia.
Yep.
So you asked if they would, the wrecks would give up some of their fish.
Keep in mind the control zone is just August and the first part of September.
I understand that.
Yeah, okay.
But my response to you is that if you want to get the free up some impacts in the fisheries and roll the pot back, why would you only ask the wrecks to free it up?
Because I don't have a modeled option that has any fisheries in 2T until after September 16th. There's not a model option in front of you that has a date. So there is no 2T.
So
the impacts of non-locals occur mostly in 2T. So if I can cut commercial time at 2N, doesn't save me a bit on Lower Columbia Naturals. There are no Lower Columbia Naturals that are impacted down there. Where they're impacted is in Area 2T, where the marine recreational fishery mostly is prosecuted. So since we have removed the commercial fishery from August, they don't have those impacts. They don't have that problem anymore.
So you're telling me that these are the only options we can look at?
No, those are what's been proposed so far.
Well,
we're ready to model anything you want to throw up. We got to model up on the board. We can do that.
Then model taking some of the impacts out of the commercial fleet to open up control.
There aren't any Lower Columbia natural impacts in there. There aren't any. They have no impact. They're not fishing in 2T. When those fish are there.
I have a comment on that.
On a single model option.
I have a comment.
They're not there.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Let me get out and let
Rob. Yeah, no, I will. Because I'm not understanding. Maybe we're just
communicating. It's on local. The whole dive yard, we spent 500 hours on these models, and this is the first time I ever heard that after that period of time, there was absolutely zero Columbia-bound fish being harvested outside of 2T in Wilmot Bay. If that's correct,
it's not.
The rate is like 98%. Barb, do you want to show? Can we look at it? Click on the genetic data. Here's the genetics that we have. Every bit. From 15, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. Here it is. This is the total. This is for Area 2T. In Area 2T, across all areas, scroll down to the bottom, 63%. Okay? Can I see this graph? Can you move this over so we can see this graph? This is a graph of the Area 2T non-locals as we move through statistical weeks. You can see here that once we get into week 40, 41 up there, we're all the way up here. This is in 2T. Okay? So the majority of impacts to non-locals occur in the August time frame when those fish are moving through. Okay? We start to move more towards Willoughby Bay fish as we move into September. But in August, that's when we get the majority of those dip-ins. Now, can we look at 2U or 2M? All the data that we've collected. 2U, 94%. Are all Willoughby origin. This is all the genetics that we've taken. Okay, so there are a couple of outside impacts here, but those are not, this isn't specific to Lower Columbia River Naturals. This is everything. Mostly what these are in 2U are some Grays Harbor chinook that dip in. Okay, if we can look at the individual assignments of each one of these if you would like. Let's go down to 2N. 2N. Gets a little bit as well. Okay? They've got a little higher percentage, but majority is 2T. And I'm going to guess that most of those occur on that northern.
Can you explain that to me? Can you back up to 2N? You just went by it.
So. I didn't go by 2N.
Okay, oh, sorry.
This is 2N right here.
So this is 2N.
72%.
Are local.
Yeah.
Whereas 94% are local.
Can you?
You're still getting non-local fish down
to
2M. Yeah,
there's still a few of those.
How about 2M?
But the majority of those are early time. We're not fishing that anymore. So this is 2M, 92.3%. So that's all the genetic data, and that includes 18 samples that has been updated. So that's every genetic sample that we've taken from the commercial or from the recreational sector. For the recreational sector, we combine those with the data that we collected in 2T because that's kind of where the majority of that recreational fishery occurs within Area 2T. So we've aggregated that.
And you sent that email to me? I'm not seeing it on my email when I pulled it up to look. That whole tab is on my email that you sent out?
It's in the model.
It's in the model. Genetic data.
It's right here.
Boom.
Okay, I don't... I'll ask you about that.
I'll send the model out to everybody tomorrow.
You ready for
to the advisors.
Sure.
I'll
send
it tomorrow. I'm not doing it tonight, but I'll do it tomorrow.
So, but I don't have it. You hadn't already sent it out.
Only if you've requested it, I sent it out.
I see.
We'll get into the advisory group in the morning.
I have a...
Go, I got Ross, and then I got Andy.
What about me?
I got you too, Bob.
Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready.
This is the issue I wanted to raise. When you look at the 50 to 100 impacts we're trying to avoid by wrecks in the control zone. If you put 2M and 2N, it looks to me like the nets are having more Columbia River impacts than you're saving by running the sports off of all that's left in the north.
Okay, I'm confused by that statement.
Well,
where's that 92% Willapa? So it's only a few percentage points of something else.
Well, it shows 72% on one and 92% on the other.
In N is 72%.
Uh-huh.
In T is 65%. U is 92. And yep. M is go to M
90 something.
Yes, that's a significant amount.
Yeah.
Those are non-locals, folks. I didn't say those are all Columbia River. Those are local versus non-local.
8% of 1,000 fish is a lot of fish.
The point is all those non-locals in certain areas are not made up of Columbia River fish. The majority of the Columbia River fish non-locals that we impact are in T and in N. We get all kinds of fish here.
Which goes in the frame.
Which goes in the frame. What?
So,
of those, whatever you want to
get.
It's on my card, you can't.
Yeah.
I know you're busy.
Go ahead, Bob.
My question is this, and that the impact zone, or whatever the hell you want to call it out there, is that limit going to be the same as the ocean when the ocean is open? Because otherwise, if it's not the same, enforcement's going to have one hell of a time trying to figure things out.
Okay.
I mean, something you want to really, concentrate on, too.
Okay. Lance?
So what is, a couple of different quick questions. What is the impact rate we take now for August 1st or whatever? Do we take a Columbia River impact in our fishery as it stands today?
I got to have a FRAM model run before I can answer that. We don't model that. That comes out of FRAM. That's not something we do internally.
No, I mean in river, in your marine area that we're fishing right now, the section that we have open that we're fishing, do we take a Columbia River impact to execute that fishery?
Anywhere in the marine area?
Yeah.
It's a combined input. So we put in, right now, we'll be doing some work in FRAM to separate out the Willapa Bay commercial from Willapa Bay recreational, but right now it's only one input.
Yeah.
And it's just Willapa Bay. So we input how many Chinook we're going to get, and then FRAM does its work and kicks out how many of those are going to be
North
Naturals. And those are, it's all based on the base period from 09 to 15 and da-da-da-da-da.
So this is where I have a problem. I have a problem when we come to the meeting and we sit and talk about we don't want Southeast Alaska and Canada to execute fisheries on their fish and intercept ours. Then we sit here and argue for 20 minutes about intercepting Columbia River fish and think that's all right.
Okay.
That doesn't make sense to me when we're all conservation-minded and we're all trying to save these ESA-listed Columbia River fish and we think we should harvest them in Willapa Bay and not harvest them in Columbia River.
I have a problem with that. We come and we have that argument. If we want to have it, I wrote the email. We want to have that argument. If you want to corner Larry or whoever it is after the meeting, go ahead. Because we wasted an hour and a half. We haven't done one. We wanted to put that model up there and run it around so everybody could play. None of these models were done secretly or like something crazy. I mean, look at them. They're all better than what you've had before. The impact rate that you're so worried about being at 20%, none of them are at 20%.
We want 14.
Huh?
That's not what we're talking about tonight. So.
Okay. I mean, I thought that you would be happy about it, and yet we're fighting still. That's the problem I have with having a meeting, like we spoke about at the start, about having a meeting that's constructive. We should have just whipped through this stuff and been done. We should have had 15 model runs done, whatever you want. Instead, we've argued for an hour and a half. We told Larry he should be fired. You've done things wrong. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I never heard that part.
Listen, yes,
you just did. Go ahead, Andy.
Let's go model two.
We get your frustration.
Let's just get started. Model two.
You might not think that. You're shaking your head, but you don't think I think that. But we do get your frustration.
It's an impossible world we live in to manage this stuff. I mean,
I have a proposal. Am I next?
Yeah. Well, no, I have. I had Andy. I called on Andy, then I'll go to you, Marlisa. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, model two. That's good.
Model two?
Yep.
That's your suggestion?
Sure. You can strat if you want to strat the early days in August. You can get them day from 1 to 7.
Take model two and run. Take
those 2 days out in August.
Okay. Yeah. Hold on a second. We've got to
put a zero there. Put a one in September 1 through 7. An M.
An M. Two. Oh, you want to come back to two?
Yeah. And go M. One, where you at?
There's 15, 6, 19, 4, and 10.
Okay, we'll take the one out of week 1 through 7 and make it the M in 15 through 21. Make that a 6. Or a 7.
What's that?
I think it only needs to stay in the first week.
19. There you go, 19. There's only 6 days that first week, right? Because we start on a Monday.
There you go. I'm good with that. Huh?
Is two use regular
non tangle? The only thing that we have is everything from stat week 38.
That looks good.
I think that looks good.
Here's the problem I have with this, and I when I look at this and we start taking salmon days away, which are fine. Mm-hmm. We're front loaded it last year for salmon. We're back loaded for coho this year.
Yep.
My question to you is, how many years since this policy has run have we made escapement? Not that we had fish there, but that we got our egg take from the NEMA and the nacelle to provide their own eggs.
The last year that we got egg take out of the individual facilities was 2014 NEMA. We haven't made it in Excel since we've been trying to get 2.5 million. But keep in mind, it's because of the ramp going from 800K to trying to make 2.5 without any sort of incremental steps. We just went from 1 to 300% more. So we've had some issues. I would expect in the nacelle either this year or next year we'll start getting returns off 2.5, so we'll be able to provide rootstock. But the NEMA has been definitely a challenge.
And we backfilled it with Forked Creek.
So every year since
every year we built both of those rivers. Yeah. Now, what I'm saying is we have had those fish there. I think every year we have had the fish in those systems to get our egg take, but we don't get it. And I think that I'm not a biologist, and I'm not going to pretend to be, although I do sometimes. I can't imagine any biologist sitting there saying it's better for those fish to lay in their upper reaches and be chased up and down, fished on. We're getting the fish through the fishery. We get them through the marine fishery. We get them through the net fishery. And then we get them to where they should be resting instead of running around. You can't tell me that those fish aren't burning more oxygen, swimming up and down there, getting chased by 15 guys all day long, than they would just laying there. And I feel like we're going to put ourselves in a huge hole of hatchery egg take. We're always worried about I think the fishery should manage for that egg take first. That should be the conservation on the hatchery side of it. And I don't know where you're going to wave this magic wand this year Because you haven't made it the last 4 years.
No.
Now you're gonna, you have no fourth grade. And if by some miracle we bump up production for whatever reason it is, you can, I mean, whether we are or not, that's something we're probably gonna know by then.
Yeah, we should have some resolution.
We should have some answers by egg take time with whether we're gonna, maybe we're gonna pump Forks Creek back up. We're not gonna have the eggs to do it. And now we're gonna put ourselves in another hole for another year. I think we should close those areas until the state or the hatchery system or whoever it is can say, we have the egg take. Whatever system you come up with, and then open it up and go at it. I don't care if you fish on after you manage to get that egg take. Because we're going to have trouble keeping those fish alive, and I think we're going to end up with, instead of having whatever it is, we're reducing now 7 million or 6 million, we're going to be down at 3 or 4 million this year, and 4 years from now, we aren't going to have any fish again.
Okay. I think I had Marlisa next.
Can you help me out on this chart? Yeah. Where does it show what you expect to be at the hatcheries this year?
Escapement?
Yeah,
down here.
Down
so
bottom.
Escapement is in this bottom row.
Okay, that's
so this
just
would be
clarifying that number.
That'd be NEMA, that'd be NACEL.
I thought Forks Creek was expecting their lower return this year. How can they be expecting 16,000?
No, that's total bay.
That's the total will of the bay. This is total will of the bay after his statement. This is Forks Creek.
Okay, good.
This is NEMA.
Thank you.
This is NACEL.
Okay. So there is a disparity between the hatcheries on expected returns coming in 2019, which is duly noted.
Yep.
I think that a bag limit inside the Willapaw fresh water should be carefully considered. And I don't think the bag limit should all be the same. Whether one fish bag limit in Willapaw because of the reduced number of fish that are coming back there is appropriate. I'm saying that this year and forward until and if it's ever flipped in the future with the river designations with that ongoing discussion. With NACEL at 4,000 expected there, I would think that they can easily do a 2 or 3 fish bag limit there, whatever the department feels is appropriate. And I'm looking at this number here, and this is on, is this the number 2 proposal
that's
that we're
NEMA,
looking at?
That's NEMA, yeah.
So I think that the NEMA should still be considered for a 3 or 4 fish bag limit. Maybe start out with a 3 fish bag limit there because we have all these fish and we can't handle 10,000 fish up there, even knowing that we need to have those eggs to backfill other areas. I would like to take this opportunity to readdress the problem outside the NEMA weir, and we need a 400-yard excavation of silt out of there if we hope to keep those fish alive in there, no matter what happens. Even if only 5,000 of them show up there, we're going to have a problem keeping those fish alive. We need aerators. We need to have... I understand. I met with hatchery management. They're planning on treating those fish in the pond. I don't think that'll be enough, but we have to take that silt out. So I am reaching out to other people outside of you, into hatchery management, trying to make that happen, trying to make things possible.
I have input with those folks, and Marlisa, I appreciate the conversation. And I have some background in hatcheries, so
I do.
So I appreciate that. But
as far as proposals go, I mean, that is... I'm looking at recreational catch here, only 2,064.
That's the freshwater, yeah.
Yeah, that's not a very big number with this many fish thinking that you're going to get that to the hatchery. How is that correlated?
Yeah, and this model run, what is this number 2?
How is that
so this
possible?
Is a 2 fish bag.
Yeah. Oh, this is a 2 fish bag.
This is a 2 fish bag.
Okay.
So out of 2 fish bag.
So let's go to model number, proposal number 3.
Are you looking for one that's a 3 fish?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Show me what we've got there. I'm looking at it here.
Did you guys not open all those?
No.
Just,
I want to save this one.
Change through. We'll just keep it open and then move to the other one. I finally got some useful stuff.
Which model 3?
Yeah, give me one that's a 3 fish bag, just so she can see that.
It's model number 3. Proposal
okay,
number 3.
Down.
Okay, so.
So the 3 fish bag, now it's what,
3,000?
Yeah, so adds about another 1,000 fish.
Well, and it also reduces the number of fish up at the hatchery, which would be a good idea. I think that this possibly should be a 4 fish bag limit here because of the number of fish, and there's still plenty to make egg take and backfill, even if we only got 5,000 fish that survived up there. So with this in mind,
Even, can you roll up to this section right up in here? You know, this doesn't meet the policy, giving them a day in August. I understand that we're not managing for the policy, and that bothers me. And they're looking over here, they're going to take, you know, you're looking at Willapa origin fish there.
Nope, that's totem Willapa Bay origins. There's one more column, this is Willapa.
Okay.
And those are hatcheries.
So you're thinking you're getting nasal and bear fish out of that.
That's what the CWTs would tell us.
Okay.
That
all right.
Happened.
You know, I would like to see this policy with a 4 fish bag limit at NEMA, a 3 fish bag limit at Nacelle, and a 1 fish bag limit in Willapa because of conservation needs up there in fresh water, with a 3 fish bag limit in the marine area, and see what that does.
Okay, hold on just a second, folks. I want to make sure that we got the proposal captured. Barb, can you read that back?
NEMA 4 fish, Nacelle 3 fish, Willapa 1 fish, and the marine area 3 fish.
And then I'd like the same thing with the marine area only at 2 fish.
Okay.
So two types to see what that does to us.
Okay.
Okay, I have Tim next, and then I see Bob and Lance and Greg. We got about... Hurry up. We got 5 minutes.
I don't know if I understand totally. So if I get off.
Yeah, but don't fire.
But here, I do agree that we're going to have... I'll go one step further. What the department wants is irrelevant. It's not going to get them. We can't get the adults back to the hatchery. Our limits are going to be 8-10. We got a problem up north. Hatchery 1 is going down. We had to shut the whole bay down to get Hatchery 18 up there before to pull out the NEMA and the others. But to go up and say that, you know, once we get fishing in the marine area, and I don't fish either one, okay, but if you're out in the marine area fishing and we take the marine wrecks and increase the marine commercial harvest, and then turn around and say, well, okay, now I'll tell you what we've got to do. We've got to go close down those hillbillies in the fresh water. You're passing forward all of the conservation concerns that we're addressing on to somebody else, okay?
No, we'll let them through our fishery. That's what we're saying. We'll take those days off and let them through the fishery.
If that was one part I needed clarification on, because I wouldn't begin to think about that that would be appropriate, you know. You know, if we're going to get the fish up there that we all share, each sector would share along the way.
Yeah.
Get them up there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Tim, in my part of it was not that we're not getting the fish to those areas. I mean, the Nacelle and the NEMA have had the fish there. They're laying there. But my part of it is the chasing them up and down the river is the problem I see. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. In all of the fisheries that we fish in Alaska and everywhere else, they've managed for that broodstock first. And I feel like we're doing that here in that we're passing it through them. You know, the marine area isn't going to stop them. And then we're not stopping them. And we've done that all 4 years. We've gotten enough fish up there. But how are we going to wave this magic wand this year and say, okay, this year they're all going to survive?
They're not good. I don't buy the model.
I'm just talking about reality.
And by the way, it goes the same way if you hook a fish and he runs around all over the place and he gets all excited. Or if you put him in a live box and you put him out, or when you chase him up and down the river, when you do that, you're going to have an effect on the fish. But I think that the point that I would like to support is none of these models, because I'm not going to do that until I really think about it. And I'm never going to support any model that's delivered to me in the middle of the night if someone gets on a plane. It ain't going to happen, okay? This is inappropriate. And I appreciate Andy and you guys going out and doing all this. I understand that. But my problem is not with that. Do a good job. You guys have done a good job of representing your interests. That doesn't bother me. Bothers me when we were left out. I don't have a problem with you. I got a problem over here, okay?
I think it's been every year.
We've always round all this stuff goes. So
no, I mean it's not. We brought a model every. This isn't the first year we brought a model.
No.
We brought one every single year. This now because of the situation we're in, I feel like it's another tension that. And we modeled just. We just modeled our fishery.
Yeah.
And you can, we could change it to whatever you want. We just threw out some stuff that we thought would work in our fishery.
Well, I guess I got to go back to the meeting minutes and the notices of the meeting. It says, bring your model. It ain't there. Okay? It ain't there.
We didn't get it either. You're exactly right. We didn't get those minutes. But we said, we don't have time. We don't have time because our meetings allow us 4 minutes out of 2 hours.
So, Tim, do you have a fishery proposal or do you don't?
Yes. I have one proposal for all of them. Okay? And that is that you back the fisheries up and up, that you can reach the scaping goal as both factors in the gravel and in the... If you are risking that in any way whatsoever, go back. And see
what do you mean? Are you talking about hatchery escapement? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, absolutely.
Because we don't have enough fish over the bar for natural escapement. Right. So your proposal would just be to close everything.
No. That's not...
I'm just trying to make sure we're clear.
Yeah. Hatchery escapement, we've got enough fish across the bar.
Okay.
We also have enough fish across the bar for natural spawning escapement, provided it may not be able to do it in all the rivers, but you can because we've already done it.
It will,
that's right. So what I'm telling you is that escaping.
Okay. And
I'm not going to give you bag limits or anything else. And so
every one of these models,
like this, I ain't going to do it.
Every one of these models meets the hatchery escapement need and also makes escapement on Willapa River.
I'll look you up and get back to from your plane trip, and I've had an opportunity to spend a couple hours looking at this.
Okay.
And I might not. But the failure for this department to plan properly does not create an emergency on my side. I have a life, too.
Okay, thank you. And
as far as the bag limits go, once he in season management, we've used it the last couple of years. It hasn't been in our favor, but we have used it. Take your two fish bag. Once you reach take, go to six. Have at it. Clean them out.
Okay.
Don't need them anymore.
Okay.
Have at them.
Greg?
I support number two with the amended number two.
This is three.
I know. That's not the one we had up there before.
Okay.
It was amended number two. And also I'd like to make a comment is I don't have a very long memory, but I do remember what happened last year, and I think that we have the same problem this year as far as Columbia River fish and other fisheries that are not going to be that good. Same thing happened, or that's what happened last year. Those fisheries closed, they all ended up in the recreational fishery ended up in the Nacelle River behind my house.
Okay.
I saw it, and I think that area should be closed until we get our egg tag. I mean, this is what it's all about. These eggs might be shipped somewhere else.
Okay.
I mean, we're all about raising fish. We want to see the numbers go up in Forks Creek, and we want to see it. We have to manage it. I'd like to see it closed till after October 15th.
Okay.
Closed from the number from the four bridge up to the hatchery.
Okay.
They have
the only ones I haven't heard from are Norm and Bob, so I want to give you guys an opportunity. Do you have any fishery suggestions?
Yeah, of course. I'll go back to the fishery suggestion that I made about...
Okay, great. You're right. I apologize.
I just want to make sure I clarify that because I'm familiar with Puget and somewhat familiar with some other areas that... My proposal to open the control zone, if possible, isn't to abuse the lower Columbia River naturals. It's to fish them at the rate that PFMC says is appropriate, not to exceed it.
Okay.
If we cannot maintain, what is it, 38%, 35%?
It's 38.
38% on those LCNs, then we shouldn't be fishing the control zone.
Okay.
I just want to make that clear.
Yep.
That it's not an attempt to exceed the conservation objectives. It's an attempt to fish to the conservation objectives.
Okay. Thank you, Norm. Bob?
I got one question, and I'll go ahead and support what Andy and Lance and Greg come up with. But I got a question what happened last year. There was a couple gentlemen down there recreational fish, and they had buckets of Chinook eggs.
Okay.
What I want to know is what happened to those eggs and those numbers? Was those factored in, or can they be factored in to find out what the implication would be on the hatchery stuff?
I can't answer that right now.
I have no idea.
I would imagine.
You understand my question?
I would imagine they were seized and destroyed.
They was already destroyed once the air hit them, you know.
Is there any, so now is the point in time where we let the public speak. I would like to see a show of hands for the members of the public. You've had an hour and 45 minutes. This is the time for the public, not the advisory.
I would like to testify.
Okay, great. Can everybody keep their hands up so I can see what we got here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, let's start here in the front row with Art, and we'll just work our way through.
We're done with this thing.
Yeah.
Art Holman, Sports. It's quite clear that the sports has no representation in the fish and wildlife anymore. When I started this a number of years ago, the commercials told us how many fish we were going to catch, what the seasons were going to be. We tried to get a week change, and Fish and Wildlife wouldn't let us. Now, I don't know why we are protecting the fish for the gill netters, means they put in this year in the Columbia River in the mainstream, taking 33% of the fish, allowable fish, and yet we can't fish the control zone. Now, it gets pretty bad when the sports has to give up for the commercial fishermen. And these packages that was presented was all commercial packages. The sports never got an opportunity to. Besides that, the policy to start with was the Rex had priority over the Kings. What was left of the Kings was the commercials. Now you can't find that anywhere in the policy. All you can find is enhanced recreation. But when it comes to the commercials, they have priority on the coho. So what gives them the right to have priorities when the sports can't? Thank you.
Who is next in the front row? Bill? Mike? Commissioner Runyon? You got anything?
No.
Okay, Ross. You're up.
Ross Barkhurst from South Bend. Just as a add on to that last bit of conversation, the whole drift of the suggestions we're hearing from the group that is much better represented here is that away from place-based harvest, and that's bass ackers. We all know that the way you make sure the rivers perform the way they should is you get the fish into the river. The two highest priorities for this bay. Number one is the Nema hatchery ready for egg take? It's all we got left. Okay. And it's not. The second highest priority is we need a well-placed fish separating weir in the Willapa River, and we don't talk about either one of those things in our advisor meetings. We had to look at four brand new models all day because you were forced to because you got them last night. Okay. Over a week ago, I asked for two rule changes for freshwater fishing. Didn't make the agenda. Enough said. Are you still assuming rec harvest normal and 2T and 2U? Okay. Hundreds of fish that won't be there? Seems like you are, but the only option I've seen is the one the commission adopted, option C, which we didn't talk about tonight. In the past, you've found Columbia fish in 2M and 2N. They don't count against commercials. We seem to have again changed the definition of escapement. Okay, it looks like to us that now the definition of escapement is nor does it get to the gravel or they get taken into a hatchery. Okay, we don't apparently try to manage the cats and dogs anymore. We'll never make escapement for the bay without considering the Bear River, the North River, and the Palix. We've never seen a list of policy deviations before the commission, and we still haven't. The meetings are supposed to be an info exchange. It's not working. There's no opportunity. The way these meetings are conducted, and I'm putting this on the fish department, Chad, not you, not Barbara. Okay. But the way these meetings are conducted with the public is unsatisfactory. You're talking about four or five more meetings. We had how many meetings in the middle of last year? It was all puff. It didn't relate to the meet, which we're trying to get to, in North of Falcon, which was the last meeting. Okay. I don't know what this is. Well, I do know what it is, but I'm not going to say it in public. My recommended approach is option C that the commission accepted, but you return the gill nets in there to tangle nets like we had progressed to so that we don't have a free fire zone in our bay. The recreational priority is not visible here tonight. I recognize that the recreational priority really cramps the style of the commercial fisherman. Okay? But that's the way it is. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start in the back. Back there. I see you. Yep, it's your turn.
Can I just talk from here?
No, I need you to come up and go on the mic. I'm sorry about that, bud. Sorry, yep.
Don't be shy, Mark.
Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Don't hold back, okay?
I'm trying.
Try not to scream too loud.
Just tell me what you think, Mark.
I'll try. Well, I don't know where to start, but I'm embarrassed that everybody's sitting around here once again. We should be directing these guys to scrap this whole thing. We went from 40 to 60,000 Chinook runs. Now we're down to just a handful. We had 6 to 8,000 so-called natural spawners at the time. We were in here arguing where you could fish and where we could fish and how many we were going to catch. We were arguing amongst us. That was a lot of fun. Now we're dealing with these individuals here. And Chad should go down to PFMC now, or whichever meeting he's going to, request the ocean take a curtailment to allow enough fish into Willapaw Bay so then we could have some fish to fish on, have a little bit of something to work with, you know. And so I just can't believe that everybody can't tell them scrap this damn thing. We've had a hatchery on the Willapaw since 1900. They actually released more Chinook the first year of the hatchery than they do now. The Willapaw hatchery, I heard, is set for a $3 million revamp. You guys know anything about that?
No, that's not accurate.
You sure? Okay.
The only money we have in capital assets is allocated towards the nacelle hatchery for phase one of that rebuild.
Okay. Well, there was $2 million spent 4 or 5 years ago. And
that is true.
Okay, but we're spending this money on upgrading the hatcheries, and we're taking less fish than we ever have. I'm embarrassed. The economic impact of just in this small area, we used to produce $1 million worth of fish to the fishermen. And as that played out through the economy, they say it turns over about 6 times. I've heard a little higher number. That's huge in this small area. I'm embarrassed that you guys promote this, and maybe you get it rammed down your throat, but you can't be going to these commissioners and saying, oh, this is going so well, because they ain't going worth a damn. Let's see. What else you want to know?
Who is the guy with the bucket of eggs? That's what I want to know.
I don't know nothing about no bucket of eggs, and you keep talking. I'm going to give you a little insight, my own personal thought here. You keep talking about all these coho going to show up. I didn't see that many coho jacks last year. Personally, and if you're using a tangletooth net, and in the years past, when you had large coho runs the year before, you seen quite a few jack salmon, jack coho in there, and that was worth using a regular net. I'm not seeing it. I don't think they're there.
Okay.
The other thing is, now you got these natural fish up there. The numbers are less and less because you got no hatchery strays, and that's what contributed to all these natural fish, kept them going all the time. And the mergansers were working the fish over for about 2 weeks, and at times I seen, that's most I seen, 20 of them in a hole. And as those so-called naturals move through, the mergansers move with them, and so you still got the same amount of predators working on what was a 3 million release up there, and let alone the coho smolts. This is doomed for failure. The only bad thing is you guys control the numbers, so you can always come up and say, well, we're just gonna meet our natural escapement component if we cut you back, and if you don't catch over 13% or whatever this phony thing is. Let's go back and produce fish.
Okay.
You know, when I first started out, I seen 20-pound average deliveries there in Chinook. Now we're down to about 12-pound average fish. So the poor damn orcas, he's going to have to eat half again as many Chinook to get the same nourishment that he used to, you know that? So we better produce some fish so we can keep the orcas going too.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce?
My name's Bruce Olgren, Willapaw Bay gillnetter since 1970. Started in high school. I don't agree with the current Willapaw Bay policy on this plan brought on by the commission at all. And one problem I see every year is this 4,300 natural spawners at the state agency brings up for escapement in Willapaw Bay. Then when you go to the ocean fisheries, PFMC, and they come out with 3,900 fish supposedly coming back. And we don't have anybody that I can tell on the inside fishery that wants to press the issue, especially when Phil Anderson was director of Washington Department of Fisheries in Olympia. This year, I thought the PFMC number was 38 or 3,900 Chinook from the outside fisheries that's proposed to come in here. You're estimating 3,900 fish is what their number is. Well, does PFMC consider Willapaw Bay a hatchery system in their ocean fishery? Because if the feds recognize this as a hatchery system and you're trying to implement 4,350 natural spawning Chinook on the inside fishermen, inside recreational and sports, to manage this fishery, your outside fishing numbers along the coast, Southeast Alaska and Canada, should be reduced significantly till that impact is adjusted to meet your 4,300 plus a surplus. And we have that in your in your handout that was sent out to everybody that from 1995 up to 1995, we had this recognized surplus of over 8,000 natural spawners with the fish numbers between 40 and 60,000 returning here, which Mark Ashley mentioned earlier. Now, when we can get the ocean fishery with your suggestions in line for our natural spawners, then that's something to be considered. But at the present, when they're coming in at a lower number that you guys expect or project at 4350 is what you want to see, that fishery should be cut back significantly. Period. And on the Willapaw hatchery system, that hatchery should be putting out 3.2 million fish each year. This dropping it down to 300,000 or 350,000 in these releases just decimates the north side of the bay, recreational or commercial fishing. Just unjustified.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. I had Commissioner Olson, then you, Steve.
I was
going to see. Oh, did you not raise your hand? I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead, Steve. You're next. You two gentlemen in the back, did either one of you want to speak? You do? Okay, thank you. So we'll have you in the early to your left.
Steve Gackey, a recreational fisher from Nacelle. Got to manage for escapement and egg take baywide. Must close the sections on the NEMA from NEMA Valley Road Bridge to the hatchery and the Nacelle from Highway 4 Bridge to the hatchery. Hooking mortality and harvest will hinder egg take. Those areas got to be closed so we can get those fish back to the hatcheries. Bag limits must be structured to ensure egg take. Maximum 2 fish bag limit bay-wide. The Nacelle has not met coho escapement the last 3 years. We need to make sure that wild component can come back. I know we got a lot of hatchery fish coming. Let's focus on that and put a limit on those wild fish for 3 years and try to get that. I mean, we've never had a problem until this policy went in place and these recreational advisors demanded the wild harvest on those coho. And I believe that was a big reason why that has dropped.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Go ahead, gentlemen. I don't know your name.
Frank.
Thank you. Yes. Ross, you can come up closer if you'd like. If you're having a hard time hearing, but 10 seconds.
My name is Frank Brunsky.
Oh, can you come up? Shoot.
My name is Frank Peremski, and I would like a handout in paper form of the public disclosure report for DNA, a report for the DNA samplings you obtain from the Willapaw Bay and all the areas for which this project, and I would like it. Okay. And I would like you to pinpoint the areas on the coast by name, how many samplers were taken, who did the samples, and some sort of proof on that. I'm sure that the charter boats are making an impact for the fish heading for the Columbia River, as well as we, our control zone you're claiming. Lastly, I don't think there should be any gill nets in the Willapa until after September, or until September 15th or later, but none before. And I've been fishing this area for about 70 years at least. And I think that, since the fish are such sold in such a limited amount, that we need a 2-bag limit, but get rid of that damn control zone. Thank you. Let's see, I had one.
Yep,
one other item.
Okay.
That's it. Good. When could I get that?
It'll take a few days for her to put together all that.
I have a feeling.
We'll get it to you. You may have to come in with some sort of jump drive or something so we can. It'll be a lot of files. I'm not sure we'll be able.
I want it in paper form so that other people can see the same thing.
So, let me just ask a question just so I'm clear about what you're asking. Are you asking me for the genetic information inside of Willapa Bay or outside?
No, outside. You take.
We don't have any outside.
The DNA samples, you guys throw it around all the time.
No, we collected DNA samples inside from the commercial and recreational fishery.
Okay.
Just inside Willapa Bay. We have almost 600 samples that we've taken since 2014. I believe 556 of those have come from the commercial sector on our onboard observation program, and 57 have come from the recreational sector through our voluntary DNA collection program.
But you tell me they're coming from earlier. They've said you say they come from Alaska to Canada,
some of the
down here, and then to the Columbia. And
I can tell you, I can give you where the Kodawar tags were collected, or where they're from, that were collected inside of Willapa Bay. I can't give you samples of something that was collected inside of Willapa Bay.
Okay, then who took the samples?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm clear of what we're asking.
Yeah, we took DNA samples in the commercial fishery, and we're taking some of the recreational samples inside Willapa Bay. We've taken
how many people
a little over 600.
How many people took those?
Depends on who was, what our observers were that day and that year. It's a variety of different people, all department staff.
But when you
talk about recreational sector is a voluntary program. We're giving DNA collection boxes to fishers, and if it is safe for them to do so, and safe for the fish, then we're asking some of those fishers to take a small fin clip and give us a DNA sample.
Okay.
So some of them are coming from members of the public. The recreational sector is providing samples themselves.
Hold on.
The commercial sector, we have an onboard observation program. So 20% of the total effort of the commercial fishery, we have a staff member on boat observing what they're doing. When they encounter an unmarked Chinook, they take a fin clip, and then those samples are set up.
Okay.
Those are the samples we have.
So, Frank, maybe it would be helpful if we could schedule some time with you to specifically understand what your question is and make sure we get you all. You're welcome to all of our data.
Absolutely.
No problem at all.
Answer in a way that satisfies what the question you're asking.
Yep.
But a lot of people ask the same question, ask me, and I don't have a damn clue.
I think Larry's got a great idea. When I get back from California, let's set up some time. You can come in, and we'll talk about this, see exactly what it is, give you what we have. No problem with
come
that.
Come in where?
In Montesano.
In Monsanto. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. If that's acceptable to you, let's
go. Good, fine. I'll come.
I'll have you and Barb arrange that. We'll have to do it once I get back to California.
I'll talk to you today.
Yep. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Marlisa, I think you're the last one.
No.
Oh, Kim, did you want to go too? I'm sorry, buddy.
Thank you for giving me another opportunity to speak as a citizen here and not as an advisor to the Willapa. I would like to thank Advisor Norm for pointing out that the policy does show that we are intended to manage Chinook for an enhanced recreational fishing season to increase participation and or catch, including consideration of increased daily limits, earlier openings, multiple rods, and other measures. This policy, I was part of the ad hoc committee that represented thousands of hours and hundreds of people, and I'm looking right at you, Larry, because I want to make sure you hear me loud and clear, as a PR problem that the department has and recognizes. We fought hard for this policy. The selective nature of recreational fishing is in line with conservation needs, trying to restore our wild Chinook and wild salmon to the gravel. This policy was hard fought for, and the first time in 50 years where the recreational fisher actually felt like we had a step forward in trying to create a fishery for ourselves. It required a lawsuit. It required thousands of hours. And all I can say after Saturday was it was a giant step backwards. Shame on Ron Warren, and I told him that to his face. Shame on him. Anything that is going to detract from the recreational opportunity that was intended in the policy is not what the public wants. I represent the fishing public, the recreational fisher, and we ask for a priority on Chinook, and whatever that means. That doesn't mean that you underhandedly go to the commission behind closed doors to leave out data and manufacture data that doesn't look real. We care about restoring natural fish to the gravel. I do. You should. You say you do, but you do little but speak the word, and you don't take any task to make it happen. In-season management is poorly executed often, in spite of advice from myself that could have changed the outcome in 2017. I really feel that there should be a ridiculous sign on the wall that says wild salmon don't matter here, and you should be made to own it. I also feel that recreational fishers are not getting the support that we need. I represent a small area here in Region 6. I hear it from up north where I have a home, that recreational fishers are angry everywhere. And if what I see happening here is only a small example of what's happening elsewhere for recreational fishing, so help me God, no wonder nothing works. I believe that we should be able to work together to solve this problem, and I shouldn't have to speak like this at a meeting. I think that there is enough fish for everyone if we manage it properly. If we were ever able to show an upward trajectory, we wouldn't be working with smaller numbers every year. For certain, the ocean fisheries takes too much when they don't allow us enough fish over the bar to meet our natural origin escapement before the season ever begins. And the final insult of the commission, with the support of the department, is to take our 20% and throw it out the window. And allow us to fish at 20%. I don't know how that can possibly be jive in any way with conservation. We expected to fish at 14% this year on natural origin Chinook, and here we are, you know, throwing that portion of the policy out the window because it's inconvenient. We can't restore we went through all of this with the stats and looked at how many years it took us if we went and followed these guidelines, if we managed it properly. If we don't intend to ever restore fish to the gravel, then just come forward and say so, and we'll go about this a little bit differently. Please be advised that recreational fishers still expect a priority on Chinook. Thank you.
Jim? Are you going to go too now, Lance? And just in the issue of transparency, I was showing Lance and Greg the Mariner score at 6-3, bottom of the 8. So, I'm a huge baseball fan. I will check my phone to see what the score is. I cannot help myself.
Ready?
Did it just change? Skip. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm an advisor, but I'm not here to speak as an advisor. I'm here to speak as the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy, which is a nonprofit organization. We objected to the way that emergency rule was passed last year in the chumchuck season, as we called it, and we filed a petition thinking that the department handled that appropriately. And we reached an agreement with the Department of Fish and Wildlife in a settlement. And the notion, or our belief of what we had, was we were going to have an advisory committee that talked about the universal problems of conservation, hatcheries, and so on. We started out a little bit like that, but never ever fully developed. The department walked away from us. The other thing was, it was clear in our intent that the advisors would have amendments or proposals to the commission laid out, discussed amongst us. We discussed that one of the first meetings, how we would vote, whether there's a minority report, so on. Disappeared. Instead, we were presented with option 4. We asked whether that was an attempt to do that. We were told no. And then we went in to discuss it before the commission as a review. People of EMA and Lee from all over the state. It did not say in that agenda we were going in there to gut the policy for 1 year. We were deceived. We were misled. And it is the purpose of the policy says that you're supposed to restore the public faith. Regardless of whether you catch the fish or you don't, whether you use a pole or use a net, this department has a cultural deception in the way it deals with the public, and it's going to get worse. So I will tell you that I'll just leave it to the legal beagles who are looking now to see whether the department violated the settlement agreement with us or not. That's a legal standard. There's another standard out there. One of the first things that I tried to get into and was successful in the Willapaw and the Grace Harbor policy was that we would manage to avoid ESA. I have lost all faith that will happen. I believe my children will never see be able to catch a Chinook in the Chehalis River again. We're on our way down here, and I'm going to be point blank telling you I am now going to go look at ESA. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Okay. Thank you, folks. Thank you all for coming. Do appreciate the input.
Is this shut down?